Hey guys, really glad to welcome Brian London to the show. He is actually the man behind Gold Newsweek Letter. Is that not correct, Brian?
Yes, Gold Newsletter.
And also, you're now the person looking after the New Orleans conference as well.
New Orleans Investment Conference, the oldest investment conference in the world. This is our 50th year celebration coming up this November.
Excellent. So you hate gold then?
Oh, I'm afraid I don't have that luxury.
Absolutely. So it's been a good conference here from Rick Rule.
Yeah.
At Rick Rule Symposium. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your big takeouts? What have you seen interacting with everybody? What are you feeling about, A, the metals outlook,
yeah,
and then maybe the possibility of the miners doing some catch-up because they have been lagging? Let me give you a little bit of a broad templates. Go ahead.
Sure. My big thesis is that this is the beginning of the fourth big bull market in the history of gold as an investing asset. In other words, since 1971,
yeah,
when it stopped being money.
Yeah.
And we had one such bull run in the early 70s. We had a brief bear market. We had another bull run in the late 70s to the peak back then in 1980. And then in the 2000s, we had another big, long bull market,
basically
2000 to 2011. And in the history of those three bull runs, the first one went up 5.6 times, I believe. The second one went up about 7 times, and the last one about 8.2 times from the low to the peak. So if you place, as I do, the bottom for this cycle at about $1,040,
yeah,
back in December of 2015, that means at the end of this cycle, which will likely be pretty extended, we're looking at anywhere from $5,000 to $8,000 or more for the ultimate gold price at the end of this trend. So it is a generational opportunity, the kind of thing we haven't seen since around 2000. Now, as far as the mining stocks, people believe they have not kept up with gold. In actuality, if you go by the major indices, they have leveraged gold, but not by as much as we think they should have.
Yeah.
So perception being reality, everybody is wondering, and I think rightly so, why the miners have not been doing as well as we would have liked or expected. I think that's due to the fact that the drivers so far have been factors that you can't really project well in the future or understand well. Central bank buying, how long will it go on? Chinese buying, when are they going to be basically filled up and not buying anymore? But also
inflation, if I can jump in and support you on the cost side of the miners.
And inflation. And, you know, who knows these days whether lower inflation is bullish for gold or higher inflation is bullish for gold, because we're in such a topsy-turvy world where everything is based on how it will affect Fed policy. But we do have, talking about Fed policy, we have the big factor coming up, that being a Fed pivot.
Yeah.
And that's coming up probably this fall, probably a couple of rate cuts. And I think the markets right now, all risk assets, and I think gold as well, are starting to price in that upcoming Fed pivot. And gold should do very well in that environment.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I'm of the view the debt markets are actually the great issue, macro, and that actually we're going to have an absence of bid under the debt markets if we do too many cuts.
Yeah,
I think we're definitely in a recession, I feel, globally,
mm-hmm,
but we passed the criteria a long time ago until they fiddled with this, the criteria anyway.
Yeah.
But in this normal environment, you would normally expect quite a series of rate cuts. But the problem is those same buyers of gold are no longer buying T-bills. And that's an absence of bid in the treasuries market. So we've got this hyperstagflation environment where they need to cut. They probably need to cut a lot.
Yeah.
They just can't afford to, because otherwise they're going to be the only sole buyer. The Fed's going to self-monetize on that. And many people seem to have, there's a question at the end of this coming, many people seem to have the notion that gold can only go up.
Yeah.
In an environment of softening interest rates. But in actual fact, we've had an incredible steepening recently. And of course, we've seen gold go up in spite of that.
Yeah. One of the points I've been making at this conference is that if you look at this rate hike cycle since, you know, what was March 2022 that it began, it's arguably the harshest, most severe rate hiking cycle in the history of the Fed, maybe any central bank. And over that period from trough to peak, gold, instead of dropping, is, you know, it would have been the consensus view, mainstream view, gold's gained $700 from trough to peak, 40% during this harsh rate hiking cycle. So you would think that when we get to the rate cutting side of the cycle, that gold should do as well or better. And I think it will, and I think everything will. But you bring up a good point. You know, the investing markets are predictive mechanisms. They price in the future. I think the most sensitive of the markets are bonds and gold.
Yeah.
And I think that some interesting things are happening in that regard, because we've had a few periods, one being October, November of last year, the other being March, April of this year, where gold was actually rising as treasury yields were rising.
Yes, at the dollar.
Yeah, and the dollar. Yeah. So the correlations were trending toward one. They were positive. And I think that's a sign of a safe haven trade. Now, typically, you would expect treasury yields to fall in a safe haven trade because investors are buying treasuries as a safe haven and therefore driving yields down. But that can flip in some cases, in that the bond vigilantes are saying, well, given the risk we see ahead, inflation risk particularly, but also in this case, I think a severe macro risk, financial risk, of not just return on your assets, but return of your assets, that they're demanding a higher yield, a higher return on treasuries before they're willing to buy them. So at either extreme, low dropping yields or rising yields can be a sign of unease in the markets.
Yep.
And I think, you know, the flows into macro flows into the gold market, a relatively tiny market, is a sign of that kind of unease and concern about the very structure of today's financial system.
We've always had it, you know, I did an MBA and it was the risk-free premium. The hurdle rate business proposition had to bypass was the Treasury 10-year yield.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of feeling from my side that risk-free premium that the Treasuries have commanded is no longer valid. And that in actual fact, that there's a reallocation to the only thing that's for sure in this environment of excessive fiat. We're adding $1 trillion every 100 days. And many people are repeating that statistic. It's a pretty devastating one. Deficits, as far as I can see, that's a whole bunch of new debt coming off the production line that somebody's got to eat.
Yeah.
And the appetite for that is dwindling quite substantially. And that actually, we could have a super spike in interest rates as a result of a debt collapse. And that could be incredibly bullish for gold because it's not about the yield anymore. It's the trust in the fiat system that is gone.
Yeah. As my friend Jim Grant puts it, it's not it's not risk-free return, but return-free risk.
Yes.
And at some point. Absolutely.
He's great, by the way. I love Jim Grant.
He's absolutely
the best. The grandfather clock of our generation with a smile and whip.
And hang on every word because
I love it.
They're gems and after gems.
Yes.
But the U.S. is in a classic debt spiral, something that would have collapsed any private enterprise and really any government, save for the one that issues the world's reserve currency, in which most of the world's debt is denominated. So that's the advantage that we enjoy, but at some point the numbers matter. At some point. And I think we're reaching that point. We're paying over $1 trillion just in interest. That adds $1 trillion to the deficit every year on top of the run rate of $2 trillion a year in deficit that we're running, plus all the off budget expenses. So the debt is
100%
accelerating at not quite exponentially, but an ever greater rate. And where are we getting the money to pay the interest on that debt? We're borrowing more.
Yeah.
So it is the classic definition of a debt spiral. And what I tell people is, don't worry. If they run out of money, they're just going to make more.
Exactly.
So that's really the situation we're in. And I think the world sees that. I think big money around the world senses that, sees that, sovereign money as well, but also big pools of capital are saying, well, we're just going to shift our allocations maybe another percentage point toward gold.
Yeah.
Given the size of the capital pool sloshing around the world
yeah.
and the relative size of the gold market.
Yeah, $15 trillion, small beer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, you don't need big percentages. And it's not also as if the U.S. is being this benign, friendly old grandpa that just has a nasty spending habit.
Yeah.
We've gone and weaponized the SWIFT system.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of the Russian seizure,
yeah.
we've bifurcated the planet. So we're actually kicking half the people out that
yeah.
would be potentially or were at some point natural investors and making enemies of them, that they almost will you to fail. So it's kind of, it's the politics seems inherently of intent to bring about this yeah. correction. And that points to an escalating and a quickening in these events. People shouldn't sit on their hands too long on this one.
No. We have a 4.5-decade trend of ever easier money, and we're in the end game of that trend. Now, I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows, whether that's going to last another 5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah. But
we are in the end game.
Yeah.
We see the trend. We don't know the exact path. The one thing we can be confident in is we're going to want to own assets that insulate us
yeah.
from that kind of turmoil ahead and that kind of a reckoning. And gold and silver are the obvious assets.
Yes, I agree. Tell us about maybe gold versus silver, or let's go back also part one. Let's do gold versus silver.
Yeah.
Outlook, silver more bullish in the long run, but we have to wait a bit for the gold to continue being the boss.
Well, silver has actually, and again, this is an example of perception versus reality, and perception being the accepted reality. Silver has actually outperformed gold during this bull market. There was a brief period in April thereabouts for a couple of weeks where silver was outperforming gold, but
yeah.
since then it's caught up. And it's doing its performing its role as kind of an unexpiring option on gold, and is outperforming gold. Whenever we've had a secular bull market in gold, one based on monetary factors like those three I mentioned, silver has dramatically outperformed gold. I expect it to do so again.
But when you say outperform, it hasn't made a new high. So we're talking a specific
right.
time frame. So for now, in the more recent period, it's sort of been playing serious catch up. We've
yeah.
seen the gold-silver ratio sell.
Since first
yeah.
of March.
So we might be at the early stage of that outperformance, which will only really take hold in people's minds when silver makes a new high, maybe potentially, or gets back up to the $50
point. Yeah, perhaps if we get into that uncharted territory on a nominal basis.
Yeah.
But getting over $30, it was a big key.
Yes.
And gold, not gold, but silver seems to be refusing to drop below that level
yes.
right now.
Well,
so for any period of time. So I think we're at a new trading range that, as you say, is well supported. And I think that's going to bring a lot more people in.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have Western investors in the silver or the gold trade yet.
Yeah.
At all. They're selling as much as they're buying. So when we get those factors that Western investors can appreciate and project, being a Fed pivot, I think they're going to come in and size.
You brought in the West and the lack of involvement in that, and also the media's lack of interest in wanting to talk too much about
yeah.
it. It's like, don't mention the canary in the mine. But we've got the Shanghai. Is it the Shanghai? We've got the Chinese side where
yeah.
they're actually trading at a premium.
Yeah.
And
significant.
We've got that sort of west to east movement of the
yeah.
metals. And, you know, the old saying of, he who makes, he who has the gold makes the rules.
Yeah,
is the golden rule. Are we seeing a decline of the West potentially? And is the metal? Is there any other conclusion apart from the fact that the metal is in fact moving west to east?
Yeah.
And I'll add one other detail before you jump in. I was talking to Keith Neumeyer yesterday, and he was pointing out how they are totally reliant on the East for the processing of most of their ore. There's very little proper
mm-hmm.
industrial scale smelting
yeah.
being done in the West. So it almost goes over there to get processed, and quite a lot of it just doesn't come back. yeah. Sorry, so go
yeah,
on.
To Chinese gold imports have been tremendous, and silver imports into India always a big factor. But yes, it's a river of gold and silver going from West to East, and that usually happens when the price is declining.
Yes.
And that's the unusual thing. You know, I hate to use the phrase in investing that this time is different.
Mm.
But that particular aspect is something we've never seen before. So the price is rising. the Eastern investors are following the price higher, which is usually the role of the Western investors. There's a good chance that once we see central banks moving to that rate cutting side of the cycle, instead of seeing that flow reverse from east to west and the west, as Western investors get in, we may have both sides buy.
Yeah.
And that's when things can really get explosive. Now, that could happen if we have some type of an emergency situation or crisis developing as well.
Yes.
That would force the Fed to not only cut rates, but cut rates in a more urgent fashion.
Gotcha. Yeah. And again, I'm coming to the conclusion that a cut's going to be good for gold,
yeah,
and a super spike's going to be excellent for gold. There's almost not an economic condition in the debt markets that is not going to be ongoingly supportive for gold, because it's almost heads I win, tails you lose in this game.
Yeah, a lot of the money coming into gold right now is, well, it's not price sensitive because it's being bought not as an investment, but as insurance.
Correct.
And that's a big change.
It's long-term money. When you buy insurance, you want, you know, 30-year yeah. cover, don't you?
Yeah. And you mentioned the U.S. Weaponization of the dollar. It's not a coincidence that this dramatic surge in central bank buying started when the West imposed sanctions on Russia.
Yeah.
It's an absolute fact that central banks are not trying to achieve, don't appear at least, to be trying to achieve a certain level of gold reserves. They want to just keep accumulating gold because they are insuring against the future. They're insuring against a reliance on the dollar ecosystem. So right now, or just recently, gold as a portion of central bank reserve assets exceeded that of the euro.
Yeah,
and we see the portion of the dollar declining while the portion of gold rising.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to cross in the near future, but I think they're going to cross eventually.
Let's go back to the mines. When are we going to get? I know you're saying perceptually there's been the miners haven't done quite as badly as perceived, but most people will bring up the HUI and they'll look at the gold and they'll look at the percentages and they're going to say, mining ain't doing it. We think there's a bit of inflation and it's costing a lot more. It's also taking a lot longer. So they've run in, you know, they're in the hated part of the world right now in getting things done. Permitting, I think Keith was saying 17.8 years on average to get something done in most places, et cetera, et cetera. Are we going to have to get deeper into the bull market before timing-wise we get a little bit of that amplifier effect of miners running, really trotting the commodity?
I think as we speak, if we see gold continue this kind of surprise midsummer rally, which I think is pricing in, starting to price in a Fed rate cut, I think the miners are going to come along. You know, another of the issues that have worked against the miners in this rally is that not only have the factors driving it been something that's not well understood or projectable, but there wasn't really an entry point. I mean, the first 6 weeks of this rally, gold was almost relentlessly rising every day, setting new records, and we didn't have a pullback that would provide an entry point. Now, on April 22nd, gold dropped $60. Hmm. The next day, or maybe the next couple of days, the price stabilized, didn't drop any further. And I don't recall exactly, but it was either the next day after that drop or the day after that, with no movement in the gold price, we had a 10% up day in Newmont mining.
Yes.
Now, Newmont's the only gold stock that's in the S&P 500.
Yep.
So it's the natural port of entry for the general investor.
For the big guys.
Yeah. So that tells me that there's money out there waiting to see that confirmed trend on understandable, projectable factors in an entry point. I think that's kind of happening right now. Hopefully it is.
And the points also to get that big movement, you need scale and liquidity to bring the big guys in.
Yeah.
And maybe we're almost too small to get the respect until there's a bit of maybe M&A, bit more acquisition or a bit more general appreciation on the small investors that we meeten up a little bit, then maybe we can start to get some institutional some funds. Because you've got the likes of NVIDIA that are, you know, they've become the white hot heat map that sucks the oxygen out of everybody else's lungs at the moment, haven't we? So it doesn't help that you're competing with this almost crypto-esque equity.
Yeah, the good news is that the gold market, from metals through the miners, is tiny relative to the capital pool. Yep. So any slight shift will have an outsized effect.
Correct.
The bad news, as you mentioned, is that it's so tiny relative to this capital yep. pool, so they don't know how they can get involved.
Yeah.
I think if you get, say, 5 years down the road, if you see the supply constraints and the very steep demand curve for things like copper, other base metals, energy metals, base uranium, battery metals, et cetera, then the mining market is going to have to grow considerably to meet that demand curve.
Yeah.
So I think if you look further down the road, the market's going to be much larger than it is today, but
yeah.
it will take years to get to that point because it just takes time. It's an oil tanker that you cannot park on a dime
I can't help but thinking an incredible shoe to drop for the success of the miners would be, you know, it's almost when we hear China's buying, it's almost a weaponization against America, and people want to resist that.
Yeah.
If you were to get someone like Warren Buffett, who's known for a long-term view, and he has held large amounts of silver before,
yeah.
entering in the market quietly and maybe accumulating a few of the bigger miners and also buying maybe silver and gold again, and that were to leak, where it's at home, you know, it's an American
yeah.
doing something who's known for long-term
yeah.
views. That would feel to me like a big shoe drop moment, and suddenly you'd get a lot of fund managers getting the flag because they're a bit herdy, aren't they? They
yeah.
need to be told it's okay
yeah.
to get into this field, guys. You're
yeah.
going to be caught late. You're going to be caught with your pants around your ankles if you leave it any longer.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a broad bridge to cross for Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
He's super much out there saying
yes.
it's just a pet rock.
Yeah, kind of he has thing. Done that, but he's also invested in silver.
He did,
yeah.
and I think that was a something that was long ago and so out of
character
for him.
Mm.
I don't know that he'll return to that, but there are a lot of other very smart people, very
yeah.
respected voices
yeah.
out there.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned Jim Grant. He is the most eloquent wearer of the tinfoil hat that you'll ever see. And he says it in such an incredibly charming way, an intelligent way that everybody listens to. Everybody gets quiet and hangs on every word. And I think he's one of the best advocates we have out there, along with some of the other very successful investors who are taking stakes in gold.
Yeah. Yes. And I think, as you say, there will be other people around him. I just threw Warren Buffett's name out. He talks sometimes out of two sides of his mouth, the political
yeah.
game
yeah.
and all of that. So he maybe wasn't the perfect candidate for it. This has been a great chat. I really appreciate
That's
it,
wonderful.
Brian. How do people engage with you? How do people come in? Where will you be next? Tell the audience that are watching it anything you'd want them to hear.
Yeah. Well, you can go to goldnewsletter.com and get a free report on investing in gold and silver that we have there, 40-page report. Really great, comprehensive, objective report. We're not selling anything. It's just good information. And the New Orleans Investment Conference is the...
What date is that coming up?
November 20th to 23rd is the week before Thanksgiving week in the U.S. So it's
gotcha.
Really close to Thanksgiving. It is our 50th anniversary this year. It's going to be a blockbuster event. Lots of great speakers. We give a money-back guarantee. If you don't feel it was worth many times your money, we'll give you a registration fee back. We very rarely had to do that. It is an extraordinary event, and you can go to neworleansconference.com. To see our list of speakers, Jim Grant is going to be there.
Oh, wow.
He only travels for our event.
That's lovely. I would go for him alone, really. I would. He's a great character.
Yes,
I think he's probably my favorite financial
Me
character.
Too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you very much for giving us your time.
Great.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. All the best.
Good.
Thank you.